What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 57. This is going to be part two of our podcast on how to prep for an ultra marathon. Tom's ran a couple now, so he has a ton of great tips and advice to make sure you do everything right so you can run those races and be successful. And we're going to cover today really recovery techniques and the dietary changes you should make to perform at your best, both the months up to the race and the race day itself. But first, let's do a quick check-in. So, Tom, how's your week been?
Oh, it's been pretty good. It's been kind of weird just taking such a long break from doing any sort of like hard, intense exercise and having like a strict plan, but it's been pretty nice. I've been a nice little vacation. I'll be taking about the next probably like 2 months off from doing anything really physical, nice little winding down period. But I also wanted to make a couple updates on last week's podcast. You know, it's kind of crazy. I did a shit ton of talking, but I didn't cover everything that I really wanted to when it came to training. Okay. Somehow with all that hour plus of talking I did, I still forgot some stuff. So I just wanted to go over that now. So when you are doing some sort of race, it's best to practice on the course itself, if you possibly can, or at least the same, like similar terrain. So if you're going to be running a trail, you don't really want to be practicing on the street all the time because trails are pretty technical. There's a lot of roots, like rocks and stuff like that. So you need to get used to it. You need to get your like body used to taking shorter steps and also your brain get it better adapted at being able to decipher what's really going on and how to best approach it. And then also if you're doing like a 24-hour run or like a 17-hour run that you're going to be doing at night, you need to do some sort of night training too. You don't need to practice running 24 hours a day, but at least get some sort of daytime training and some nighttime training. That's pretty much all I wanted to go over.
Okay. Well, yeah, that makes sense as far as performing in training, how it's going to be the race day, right? Just get used to those things.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to have your first run at night be during the race because then you're going to be tripping over yourself. And at that time, you're going to be really fatigued anyway. So you want that stuff to be like second nature to you instead of, you know, being a whole new experience.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah, it's funny how you can talk for an hour. We do this all the time and we finish these podcasts and you're like, damn it, I forgot to say this. I forgot to say that. It's just funny how that happens.
We know too much. Like we're so passionate about this. So we have so much we want to say that there's just no way we can cover it all.
Yeah, that's true. No, the rabbit hole is real deep for sure.
Yeah, so that's pretty much it with me. I've been just taking it easy. So what's new with you?
This week, so you talked about it maybe 3 weeks ago. You talked about you kind of were changing your caffeine regimen, right?
I've been trying to. I went back to drinking coffee pretty much on a daily basis, but my new trick is I've been like cutting it in half. So I'm going to like slowly go that way to okay. The point where I'm like barely drinking any.
So I started doing that myself around the same time you brought that up. It's funny, my mom texted me and she said something, I forget the exact word she used, but she's like, I think you should like cut out caffeine. Because, you know, I mentioned I take caffeine every day before my workouts. And if I don't take caffeine, I actually get like a pretty bad headache, you know?
Well, you straight sounded like an addict when you're like, oh yeah, there's no way.
Yeah, it's not happening, right? And I'm all about like, you know, being strong mind, strong will, strong body, all that. And I was like, man, like caffeine's kind of a crutch for me. So I, after that podcast, I started slowly weaning myself off. And because I knew if I just went cold turkey, I would have really bad headaches for a few days. And I didn't really want to do that. So it's been almost like 5 or 6 days now without any caffeine at all. for the first time in a long time. And I just slowly, you know, I cut my dose in half, and then I cut it in half again. And so I've been training without caffeine. I've been doing everything without caffeine, and I feel pretty good, surprisingly.
Good, good. Did you notice any sort of effects of it? Any side effects from cutting it out?
No, I really thought I did it so slow that I never got a headache, and I was worried about like just my performance while working out. But like, I'm the type of guy where I go to sleep, I think about my workouts, I wake up like a kid on Christmas damn near every day excited to work out. So I don't need that boost to really get focused. Like, it's really just in my bones, you know? So I just decided I don't think I need it anymore. And I don't, you know, I'm performing well. I'm still doing my cardio. I'm still, the energy is high enough. Like, is it like peak 100%? Maybe not, but it's good enough to do what I need to do, you know?
Okay, good, good. Glad everything worked out for you then. Yeah. Better than mine. I had to reapproach it. Going cold turkey was a little hard.
Yeah, it is hard. Yeah, and your sleep schedule is a little off, so it makes it even harder for sure. But I mean, I remember, like, I don't know if you remember David Goggins. He doesn't, like, listen to music when he works out because he thinks you should be able to motivate yourself. That's something I've been thinking about lately, too, because I still have to listen to music. Or at least I think I do. I shouldn't say it that way, but I think I have to listen to music. So maybe in the future that's something I'll try. I'm not sure. But for right now, cutting out caffeine's been a success.
Good, good. Glad that worked out for you.
Yeah. I did want to touch on something. So next week we're going to talk about cooking food, specifically meat, or I guess everything really, and just what that does to the nutrition, to the digestibility of food. And that might sound simple, but it is more of a complex topic than you think. So I've actually been going through a lot of old, I don't know what the term is, like anthropological papers. Like, what do you call the fuckers who go look at bones all day? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, anthropologists.
Yeah, there you go. You know what I mean? So I've been reading a bunch of their stuff because humans, our brains exploded in size. It kind of eventually turned us into humans for the most part. And there's an argument out there or a theory that cooking meat kind of helped that process along. And it doesn't look like that's true as far as the stuff I've read. But I did read this very nerdy paper, and I wanted to bring it up because I think you might appreciate it yourself. So the title of it is called Ratio of Central Nervous System to Body Metabolism in Vertebrates is Consistent and Functional Basis. So that sounds kind of technical, and it really is, but it just talks about, like, there's a close correlation between total body metabolism and your central nervous metabolism. And among, like, all species. So everything from humans to dogs to cats to elephants to whales. Like, I'm talking, like, the size scale is huge, right? It's pretty consistent that our central nervous system takes up 2 to 8% of our total body metabolism. And who gives a shit as far as that fact? I mean, all this information is not going to pertain at all to next week's podcast. But the only species of animals that they tested where the central nervous system took up less total energy. Can you think of it at all? Does this anything ring a bell right now? Just think of the animals, wild animals, domesticated animals, anything stand out?
I was thinking ours probably takes up a lot more, so I don't think it's us.
No, ours are the same. So the only animals that didn't fall in this curve, and it's a fairly linear curve, like it's a damn near straight line, were animals that humans domesticated. So chickens, pigs, lamb, and pork, like these animals, like these breeds of these animals, their central nervous system takes up like less than 1% of total body metabolism. And it kind of just goes into the fact that how much we've changed these animals through like selective breeding. Like, of course, back in the day, we had to breed the most timid of the wild animals. And then over the years, we've changed them so much that now they are the only animals that don't align in this curve. I thought it was so funny.
Well, that makes sense about chickens. I'm kind of surprised to hear that about pigs, because pigs are generally pretty smart. Or at least we consider them to be smart. I'm not surprised with chickens. Chickens are dumb as hell. If you give them too much water to drink from, they'll drown themselves.
Yeah. But I know, seriously. So all of them, like, you can just think, like, they're the only animals that really did not line that curve. I just thought it was a super interesting fact, and it's like little papers that I read and little tidbits I take from it, that's like one of the more interesting ones, like how we've affected domesticating animals, you know, like their central nervous system is literally smaller. I don't know if they're making the connection with literal intelligence, but just the effect that metabolism has, their central nervous system takes up less of their total metabolism. So it gives their body more energy as far as putting it towards maybe literal tissue growth. So maybe they can make fattier animals, you know what I mean? Stuff like that.
Yeah, that probably does have a lot to do with it. It's just like how much heavier those animals are because they're domesticated than what they would be naturally.
Yeah, like there's nothing natural about how low their CNS takes for the metabolism or how much like fat a certain goat takes or a certain pig takes, you know. And they did test like wild pigs, and wild pigs fall on the line perfectly normal. So it's really just the domestication process that really changed them. So
their metabolism is mostly going to be based off the size, right? Generally, the bigger something is, the faster the metabolism should be. Or no, that's not right. Generally, it's the opposite.
Yeah, it's opposite. Yeah, exactly. It's complicated. It is, but it just, I don't know. I thought I'd share that with you. I just thought it was super interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. I'd like to see the paper.
Yeah, I'll link it next week's podcast for sure.
So. Okay, cool.
Yeah, so if that interests you, we're going to talk about that next week, but now, yeah, I guess we can get to part two. Like I said earlier, we're going to be talking about the nutrition, really, the recovery techniques. And like Tom mentioned at the beginning, right now he's in that recovery phase. He just ran that ultra marathon. It was brutal, so he needs to recover. And we're also going to touch on some of the specialty gear you'll need. So like you can talk about it a little bit. This running for 11 hours, you need certain stuff. You just can't go with a basic ass like water bottle, you know?
No, definitely not. You need like the proper type of hydration pack. And if you are doing like trail running, you need like special shoes for it and stuff like that. You know, it's not, if you're just doing like a typical marathon, yeah, you can just get any sort of shoes, you'll be fine. But the harder the race, like, hey, the better equipment you're going to need, or at least more specialized.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll touch on that. Hopefully you guys like it. And next week we'll talk about cooking. Hopefully that goes well. And enjoy it.
So we talked about the training. Let's get into the recovery.
Yeah.
So.
And this is what you're doing for the next 2 months, Damon.
Oh, exactly. So the harder you train, the harder you got to recover. So movement should be done every day. And hey, this is a big thing when it comes to endurance athletes because hey, I just ran 30 miles today, or I just biked 50 miles today. I don't need to get up and like walk to the fridge. I can have my wife do that. I don't need to get up and go to the mailbox. Like I'll drive my car down the street to the mailbox.
I already did my work.
Yeah, like a lot of that type of stuff. And it's like, no, not really. You really need to be getting up and moving all the time. Just because you ran 30 miles in the morning doesn't mean you get to be a couch potato the rest of the day. There's a lot of benefits that come from movement besides just getting in better shape. So like walking, yoga, like when I'm talking slow bike rides, I mean super slow. Like you're just at a chilling pace, conversation pace. You shouldn't be sweating or anything like that. Your heart rate should never even come close to that, like target zone we were talking about earlier. You want to keep that thing down like below 100 if possible, maybe 110 tops. Like you want to keep that super low.
That's hard for people though, because people, when they hop on their bike, especially if they're a biker, they just instinctually want to break a sweat.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I mean, but hey, you're an athlete, you're used to it, but that's why having a coach sometimes is a good thing.
Yes.
And that's another way that having a heart rate monitor comes into play is you can really know like, oh, hey, it's a recovery day. I'm pushing myself too hard.
Yeah, gotta be tone cool. It down. Yeah.
So like movement, what it does is it increases venous return and lymph flow throughout your body by a thing called the skeletal muscle pump. That's just like your muscles contracting. That's going to help the blood return to your return through your veins back to your heart. Guess what? Your legs have to overcome, the blood from your legs has to overcome gravity to make it back to your heart. So it relies on the skeletal muscle pump. Your calves constantly contracting and your like quads and hamstrings contracting to get that blood back. We're designed to be walking around all day. We're not designed to be sitting all day long.
Yeah. This is the first time in human history where we could sit in a chair for 8 hours and call it a work.
And even if we were sitting around a lot during the day, we would still be moving. Because guess what? Sitting on a rock isn't very comfortable. So you wouldn't be sitting at a 90 degree angle for 12 plus hours. You would sit down in that, okay, my ass hurts, let me get up and let me move to a different position. I'm going to get up and get to a different position. You'd be constantly moving just because you wouldn't be comfortable.
Yeah,
you wouldn't have the luxury of being in a lazy boy.
Yep.
So, like, yeah, it's completely not natural. So, like, what that's going to do is it's going to remove a lot of just, like, the harmful byproducts that are in your muscles done by all that damage from the workout previously. So you do need to be constantly moving. You want that blood flow to constantly be going. One of my favorite recovery strategies, I've been doing this every single day since Sunday, are warm or hot Epsom salt baths. It's a great way to get magnesium into your body.
super relaxing, gets your heart rate nice and low, make it nice and dark in there, nice little date with yourself, kind of romantic, just yeah. Perfect. I love it.
No, that's good. I wish I could do that, man. I can't fit my bathtub, so yeah.
Yeah, I'm so glad I'm little.
Yeah. That's good.
And the most important one is sleep. So average people need about 8 hours of sleep. If you're running 3+ hours a day, you're not average. You need more sleep than that.
Definitely not.
You need to be getting like 9 to 10 hours of sleep. Like LeBron James, Serena Williams, Usain Bolt, these are just some of the very best athletes on the planet that the planet has ever seen. They're all getting like 9 to 10 hours of sleep. And they prioritize sleep so much that if they can't get that sleep, they don't train. Or if they do train, they definitely train like for just technique type base instead of going for overall performance and like an endurance type of thing. They really tone down the intensity.
Yeah, you have to prioritize sleep. I think we see this all the time with people we talk to, people we work with. Very few people sleep enough. And it is what it is. There's like a FOMO culture, like fear of missing out. Like, oh, yeah. There's a show on at 10 I need to watch. There's a baseball game on. It's over at 11. I need to watch it. Hey, I come off sometimes, I mean, you already know this, kind of like an asshole sometimes, because if my wife has something going on at night, there's some party. Like, tonight we're going to a wedding, or a Mendy, which is like a wedding day one. I've already told my wife, yo, we're showing up. I'm saying hi to all these people. We're bouncing. Because I'm not going to lose out on all this sleep. Because I know it's going to affect me the next day. And it's not even going to affect me the next day. It's going to affect me for the next 3 days, metabolically. Even if I don't realize it mentally, maybe I'll wake up feeling good. I know there's a metabolic cost of not sleeping enough.
Oh, definitely. And if you really want to be able to like track it, get a HRV monitor. I talked about that in a previous podcast. That's either the Whoop, which is a wristband, or the Oura Ring. It'll let you know how good your sleep actually is.
Yeah, I looked into that way more ever. You sent that. It was a tip of the week.
Like a month or so.
Yeah, I looked into that a lot more. I'm crossing my fingers that the next Apple Watch has that in it. Because if it does, I'm pulling the trigger.
Okay. Because
I looked into the Whoop, and I was just like, God, this just, they're such a commitment. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like a prescription, subscription, all that stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
And another couple of things you can do to, like, improve your sleep quality, if you can't increase your sleep quantity, is get, like, a plant to increase the oxygen in your room, open up a window, make your room as dark as you possibly can, you know, just a few of those things. I have a bunch of tips of the week on improving your sleep, so kind of look some of those up.
Yeah, just check the website.
And this is such a big thing, is with our clients, like, I don't recommend anybody start training until they get the sleep dialed in. Like, if you're only going to get 6 hours of sleep a night, you don't need to be training.
What's the point?
Yeah. You're going to be causing more harm than good. You're probably going to injure yourself because you're not having all that recovery time.
I just literally yesterday, this lady at work talked to me, and big old girl. And actually, I shouldn't say it. That's so rude.
Edit it out.
I won't. But it's just, I mean, look, what, she ain't small, okay? And she's talking to me about losing weight. So she's like, oh, I went running. I used to run a lot, and my knees hurt. And I was just like, you don't run. I was like, you are literally too heavy to run. Like, lose weight, get your diet dialed in, give me or give yourself 3 months, and then work out. You'll feel better, you have more energy, and you won't get injured. I was like, getting injured is demoralizing. It's going to make sticking to your diet even harder.
Even for people like us that have been training for so long, like, it's hard to get injured. Because then you can take a break. I mean, you have to get back into it.
Yeah, you fall off the tracks, all that.
Andrew Luck just retired. He loves football more than anybody else I could think of because he kept getting injured. Yeah. He's like, I can't take this anymore.
You know he went vegan?
Did he?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Went vegan, kept getting injured. You know who else went vegan? DeMarcus Cousins, Lakers center. Oh, yeah, got injured, out. Dumbass vegans. Let me just put that in there. Sorry.
All right, so where are we at? We used the recovery. So training nutrition. I mean, honestly, your training nutrition should be very similar to just any sort of healthy diet. So, obviously, begin with real, unprocessed food. If you need to know if something's real or not, you should have been able to eat that 100 years ago. You shouldn't be able to find that on the planet like 1,000 years ago. It should be coming not within a bag or like a box or anything like that. You should find it on a shelf just naturally.
Yep.
So, we all recommend a high-fat, low-carb diet. So, some of the benefits that are going to come with that is improved insulin sensitivity, decreased body fat and body inflammation, and increased daily energy. That's basically just coming from the daily energy is, hey, if you're better at using your body fat, you have tons of body fat, you have that constant fuel source, you'll be good to go.
Don't get tired.
Yeah, the decreased body fat is because, hey, you're using your body fat for fuel now,
and your insulin's low, so you're not storing that body fat anymore. And that decreased body inflammation is coming from you eliminating a bunch of crap from your diet and then also getting rid of sugar, which is pretty pro-inflammatory.
It is, yeah. I was just talking to my man Tony yesterday. He's recently went carnivore, and one of the big things he talked about is he doesn't get tired, just constant energy. And I was like, yeah, there is. I genuinely think this training nutrition here is going to be just animal-based, but I'm strictly carnivore now. But this is literally an advantage for everyday life. I can set a pace that not too many people can keep. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Both mentally and physically, I can go harder for longer. And I really attribute that to the diet.
Yeah, like we were just talking about, like if you did have a big work project and you need a lot of mental strength, how many people would you need, how many other people would need to take breaks to get food? And you'd be good to go. I don't need these breaks.
No, all day.
I just keep going.
Exactly.
And then one thing that I just experienced, like the complete polar opposite, while we're out there running, I didn't stop until I got to the third aid station. And that was only because I needed to refill my fluids. I didn't need to refill like food. And people were getting sick all the time because they had to constantly keep eating more food, and like their body just couldn't handle it.
Yep, a huge advantage.
Such a big advantage.
Yep.
So yeah, like that daily energy is like such a big advantage of it, and that increase like brain capacity, all those ketones, such a great fuel source for your body. So yeah, you want to have a lot of high fat in your diet. Primary fuel source, what we just talked about. Healthy fats are going to come from like fatty cuts of meat, your ribeyes, your porterhouses, chicken thighs, salmon, stuff like that. Butter, ghee, tallow, lard. If you're looking for some vegetable sources, coconut oil, olive oil, avocado oil, those are better ones. Fish such as sardines and salmon are a great way to increase your omega-3 fatty acids. Those are essential, so you need to be consuming those. And land animals like beef, lamb, those are some of the better sources of your omega-6 fatty acids.
100%. And I can't state this enough. Do not consume industrial seed oils. So we're talking canola, soy, corn, rapeseed, sunflower, safflower. All those things are poison. And that is not an overstatement. They are poisonous for your body. Do not consume them.
Yeah, we have a podcast on that. I think it's Industrial Seed Oils is the title.
Yep.
I don't know, it was about 15 episodes ago. Go back and listen to that if you really want to know all the dangers of that.
Literally, they might be the root cause for damn near everything.
Oh, and just kind of talking about that. So I was out in the sun for 10 hours. Did not get sunburned.
Thank you. I'm glad. Yeah, I meant to ask you that. There you go.
Did not get sunburned. Do you know how many other people I saw caking it on? I mean, like, they didn't even take the time to rub it in. Like,
it's all white.
Yeah. You know, like, how so many politicians just got in trouble for blackface? This is the complete opposite. Just white face out there, left and right. And yeah. I don't know how many hikers I saw out there that were just covered up, long sleeves, pants, hat, sunglasses, everything. It's like, why are you even outside if you're afraid of the sun this much? Yeah. Like, what are you even doing?
Go inside, bro.
Like, it was just kind of amazing to me. But
and don't get into it. You're a white boy. Like, white as shit.
Oh, yeah. This was 10 years ago.
Done.
There's no way I would have been able to move the next day. Yeah. I probably have been hurting more from my sunburn than from my actual muscle soreness.
Yep. Yeah, I actually had, because we did a podcast on sunscreen, whatever, a few weeks ago, and another guy at work recently was like, oh, so what's the best sunscreen? And I told him, this is not a small individual who asked me this, I said the best sunscreen is dietary change. I was like, legitimately, you want a sunscreen? Change your diet. And he was like, no. And I was like, all right, just get a zinc-based sunscreen. Yeah. So, yeah.
Go ahead. He wasn't looking for a change that hard.
No, he wasn't. He was like, I'm not about that life. I was like, all right, whatever. So,
all right, so we just talked about fats. The next thing we want to talk about is just high quality protein. So animal sources are always going to be your best sources of protein. They have all the essential amino acids. They also have the best bioavailability. Your eggs, your beef, fish, dairy, pretty much anything. If it walks, you're good to eat it. Or swims. If it moves, eat that.
Yep.
Dairy only if you're not sensitive to it. Unfortunately, I am sensitive to it, so I can't be consuming that.
Yeah,
wish I wasn't.
Yeah, I'm good with dairy, thank God.
Yeah, but protein isn't just about building muscle. It does build muscle and it does build strong bones, so those are great benefits to it. But it's also about your enzymes, your hormones, your immune response, and then some of it can get converted to glucose to replace your glycogen stores that you're burning up with all this like high intensity exercise.
Yep.
So, like, hey, those hormones, we're talking pretty much almost all your hormones are going to have a lot of protein base to it. Even ones that are going to be used during exercise, stuff like epinephrine and norepinephrine, that's like adrenaline, noradrenaline. Your immune response, if you're doing all these crazy activities, you're more prone to get sick. So you want to make sure you have a lot of protein in your diet.
It's true. And actually, yeah, talking about converted to glucose, what I thought about with your, you said those essential amino acid drinks help with your calf cramps at the beginning. Alanine is really one of the primary amino acids that does kind of, is part of gluconeogenesis. So maybe it's alanine in that drink that's the primary amino acid helping you. I thought about that when you said that. I'm not sure if it's true or not, but.
Well, you think my glycogen stores are low that early?
No clue. But something with water. I mean, because it does go water with it, you know what I'm saying? So I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I really don't know what's going on there, because everything I look up when it comes to cramping says electrolytes.
Yeah.
It's potassium, it's magnesium, it's something along those lines. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, I asked around, one girl told me, like, she started taking branch chains. And I was like, well, essential amino acids have branch chains in them, and they have more on top of it, so it's a better source.
Yeah.
So that's why I went to it, but
got it.
Whatever. So carbohydrates, there's nothing essential about them, so it's not necessary that you take them at all. Every vitamin, mineral, macronutrient, fuel, protein, building blocks, everything can come from a nose-to-tail animal-based diet. So they're not essential. But I do recommend consuming them like 1 to 2 times per week after the toughest workouts of your week. So like after I do my 20-mile runs, my 30-mile runs, that's when I consume carbs. And I use I like sweet potatoes because I like making it with like a little breakfast scramble. You like white rice, those are good pretty good sources.
Yeah.
You can use fruit as well. As long as it's like fresh in season, don't be eating blueberries in January, something like that.
Yeah, you know, farmed in chili or some shit.
Yeah, you know, if it's local, why not? I have no problem with that. Just overdo it, because you're only trying to consume carbs just to replace your glycogen stores, and that's it. If you overconsume carbs, you're going to start storing body fat. That's what carbs do. That's the purpose of them.
Yeah.
So the reason that I do recommend it is because, so we just talked about how protein has a lot of uses. One of them is to convert glucose into glycogen. Well, wouldn't it be better if you can spare all that protein for the other uses when you already have something that can convert glucose into glycogen just by consuming some glucose?
Yep.
That's the only reason I recommend it. And that's the only reason I recommend doing it after your hardest workout, because that's when you really need to replace probably like 80% of your glycogen stores.
Yeah, you're going to be depleted.
Yeah, like that's the only time I really recommend it.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, like if you're on a high protein diet, which if you're an athlete, you should be on a pretty high protein diet. Do not limit protein. There's no reason to.
Not at all.
So just kind of spares your consumed protein for all its other roles, more important roles than that gluconeogenesis.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. That is a great point, to spare some protein, and you don't have to worry about getting fat. You don't have to worry about some sort of metabolic cost when you're training that much and that hard. You're going to be fine.
And if you do want them, maybe you do better with them if you're doing like more high-intensity work during the week. You can consume them every day. I just recommend doing it after your workout and pretty much at night. That way those carbs are being used to replace your glycogen stores, not being reused as like an energy source throughout your day. Let your body fat be used for energy.
Exactly. Yeah, you're pretty much, think of it like going down a gradient. You're using up carbs throughout the day and throughout your workout, then you replace them at night, so you give those carbs somewhere to go.
Yeah, and then all throughout that day, since you don't have like high blood sugar, you're going to be using body fat for fuel.
Yep.
And that's what you want. You want to be lean and mean and be a better fat burner. The better fat burner, the more endurance you got.
Exactly.
So we'll just talk about a couple organ meats here just because they are so nutrient dense. So like liver is, I think, the most nutrient dense food on the planet.
Oh, it's A+.
And just like the main thing you want to do about this is just immune support. The last thing you want to do is get sick when you're in the middle of training.
Yep.
That's going to mess up you for a couple weeks. Maybe you're only sick for a couple days, but then it's going to take you a couple days to rebound from it. Just overall not good. So just like liver is the best thing you take for your immune support. It has a ton of other uses too.
Yeah, it has. I mean, it checks every box as far as vitamins and minerals. And the only negative can be the taste. Some people really don't like it. And I understand that. You know, it does have a unique flavor profile, but just get over it, man. Put some butter on it. Mix it in with, garlic? There's ways to get around it.
I mean, bacon makes everything taste better.
Yeah, bacon.
I ground up liver, heart, and kidney and put it in with, like, my ground beef hamburgers. It's a great way to kind of cover up the taste.
Well, the first time I ever had a liver was actually from your mom. And I think your mom did bacon and liver, right?
Yeah, bacon, liver, and onions.
Yeah, so that's what she did, yeah. So that's a way to get around the flavor.
And the next organ meat that I want to talk about, well, actually, I think you should talk about it because it's probably your favorite food out there.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's heart. So, CoQ10 is honestly a vital, vital part of our electron transport chain, which is in our mitochondria, and that's how our body produces the bulk of its energy. And we're obviously talking about training, and we're obviously talking about optimizing your diet. So you're one going to be at the most high energy producing state possible. So having your CoQ10 levels elevated all the time is great. And beef heart, what we're talking about, is the highest source of CoQ10 of any food on the planet. So I personally eat beef heart all the time. And I mean, literally every day. I think I have like 40 pounds in the fridge right now. And it's, I eat it for multiple reasons. Again, it's just healthy. All the vitamins and minerals in it, it's going to be very similar to like a ribeye or some T-bone steak. But on top of it, you get a bunch of CoQ10. So if you can find heart at some sort of butcher or your local market, it can be hard. But look for beef heart if you can. Chicken heart if you can't find beef heart. And try and consume that, you know, once or twice a week.
And it's really cheap too.
Dirt cheap because no one really wants it, you know.
Chicken hearts, I think, are like $1 a pound. Like, they're so cheap.
That's, like, free.
Yeah. The beef heart's, what, like, $3 a pound? $4 a pound?
Yeah, it's, like, $3-something, yeah.
And that's 100% grass-fed, like, you know. Like
local.
The best you can get, and yep. It's only, like, a couple dollars a pound.
Yeah, so I can't not buy it. You know what I mean? Like, I have to do.
Yeah, and, like I was saying, I was making those burgers. I did those 3 days in a row last week right before my race.
Cool.
Like, making sure I'm, like, loading up on these.
Yep, that's smart.
Instead of carb loading, I was CoQ10 loading.
Yeah. And it worked, man. You finished. That's cool.
So I don't know if you would consider these an organ or not, but this is just something that should be in most people's diets, is bones or bone broth. I actually consume both. After I'm done making my bone broth, I'll eat some of the bones that are soft enough.
Yeah, it's gross to me. So gross to me.
I don't know, man. They're delicious. The first time I did it, I thought they were really grainy. Uh-huh. But, you know, after a while, I liked it.
Starting to get down with it. Okay.
They're full. There's so many different things in it. But you probably, if you go to a GNC and you ask, hey, what's the best thing for my joints? They're going to tell you to either take MSM, chondroitin, glucosamine, or like a combination of the three. Well, guess what? All three nutrients are in bone broth. And those are so great for your bones, joints, pretty much anything that has to do with that. Like your cartilage, all that. Perfect source of that. And bone broth is super cheap. You can either buy it from the store already made. It's like $5, between like $3 to $10, somewhere around there. Or you can make that shit yourself. I make it myself, and I think every batch I make is probably only like $2 to $3 worth. It's really not very expensive.
What's that brand you recommended? Kettle?
It's Kettle and Fire.
Kettle and Fire. So that's a good one you find at the store, Kettle and Fire.
That's like the most popular one.
Okay.
I don't know if Epic has gotten into that game or not. I think they have.
I don't know either.
I kind of like lost track because I've been buying bones for my
farm. Just making it yourself.
Yeah. It's so much better, and you get to add more stuff to it, and you actually get the fat in there, too, where a lot of the ones you buy from the store, they, like, skim the fat out of it.
Yeah, you don't get any fat. It's very, just, like, water damn near.
Yeah, I love the fat. Like, I'm not trying to get rid of that.
Yeah, no, I do make my own bone broth, too. I actually haven't made any in a few weeks. I've kind of gotten away from it. It never really fell in my routine, because I think it's kind of gross for some reason. I don't know why. Some things just don't vibe with me, and bone broth seems to be one of them, but I'm fully aware of the benefits of it. And like Tom said, if you go to the GNC and you find an MSM, chondroitin, and glucosamine pill, that shit's gonna cost you $50
for a month.
Yeah, that shit's not cheap, you know, and that might even be like on sale. So it's honestly going to be more price effective, and it's overall healthier because all the other crap you're going to get in bone broth just to make your own bone broth.
Yeah, and if you want to know, like, some of the ratios, I know we just talked about how important fat and protein are.
Oh, and hold on. We have a whole episode on bone broth.
Oh, yeah. That was about 10 episodes ago. And I think it's called Benefits of Bone Broth.
Yeah, so check that out if you want to know more about bone broth.
Yeah, we also have an episode on organ meats as well.
Yeah.
I think we pretty much have an episode on every single one of these topics.
Yeah, probably.
So just let's talk about the ratios, like how you kind of make it up.
Yeah.
So fat should be 60 to 80% of your daily calories. Protein, like 20 to 40. Carbs should be about 0 to 10, kind of just depending. It's going to change from person to person, and it should change day to day because you're living a different day every day of your life. Your training is going to be different, so your needs are going to be different. So the best way to do this is just kind of track what you eat, especially in the beginning. Track how you feel. If you eat something and an hour later you're hungry, there's something, you either didn't eat enough fat, you didn't eat enough protein, something along there. Maybe you ate too many carbs. So there's a lot of just different ways to play with it. Maybe you ate something and you felt sick, you felt some joint pain. Just kind of just monitor this stuff, especially in the beginning. And then after you've been doing that for about a month or so, you should be able to recognize the patterns. And then you can go into more intuitive eating.
That's what I do. That's what you do as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you can even take like a little food journal, especially in the beginning, and just get real detailed with it, like Tom said. So write down how you feel, not just what you ate. And eventually you'll get down to what your protein should be and what your fat should be, what your carbs should be, and when you should eat them. And just pay attention to yourself and pay attention to what your body's telling you.
All right, so we did about all the prep work. Now it's time to talk about the race day itself. So we just talked about how carbs are just worthless. You don't need to put them in your diet.
Yeah.
Today is the day. Go crazy with the carbs.
Have fun.
So sports drinks, Gatorade. If you're really like into this type of thing, there's a lot of better sports drinks out there that have a lot of carb sources, and they'll have like a lot more electrolytes in there. That's why there's sugar in those sports drinks, is to make those electrolytes palatable, so you're not just drinking salt water. So yeah, that's when you want to go crazy with those.
You like Jolly Ranchers, right?
You can. I don't do them. That's too much sugar for me.
Mm-hmm.
Fruits are fine. Candy, M&Ms. I mean, if you go to an aid station at a race, they got Oreos, M&Ms. I've got some trail mix. Trail mix is okay because like there's salt on them. But I'm loading up with so many electrolytes during my races. One thing that Zach Bitter recommends is bananas fried in coconut oil. So now you're getting the glucose from the bananas and the MCT oil from the coconut oil. And like MCTs are great because you don't need to like really process them. They're ready to use for your body for fuel. So like there's very little digestion, not like a typical fat.
Yeah, MCTs actually cannot be stored as body fat. They can only be used as fuel. So once you ingest them, your body has no choice but to burn them. So it's a great fuel source for that very fast digesting fat.
Yeah, so like digestion is pretty much your enemy during a race. Because if you need to digest something, that means you're taking away blood from sweating, you're taking away blood from your muscles, you're depriving your muscles from oxygen so you can digest these foods. So I don't recommend taking like protein sources at all, because they're not going to be any benefit. There's not going to be any benefit. It takes up too much energy to digest them.
That's why you just do amino acids.
Yeah.
Which is a pre-digested protein.
Yeah, exactly. They're already broken down, so you don't need to do anything like that.
Hold on. Did you do fried bananas on this race?
I did at the beginning, but they were starting to give me a stomach ache.
So that's what gave you the stomach ache?
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
So I brought like 4 bags of them. I did 3 and then just stopped.
Oh, okay. So you ate a lot then.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, there was, I made 4 bananas fried in, I made like banana chips out mm-hmm. of 4 bananas. So each bag was probably about a banana's worth.
Okay.
So I consumed 3 bananas. What is that like?
Oh, that's not a lot then.
200 carbs.
Do they taste good? I don't know.
They were pretty good. I didn't, yeah. It was my first time making them, so they weren't perfect.
Okay.
There's probably, I definitely used too much oil.
Why?
Because they were oily still.
Oh, even after they, okay.
Yeah. But whatever. I mean, they didn't make me sick or anything.
Okay.
I just noticed that a lot of people were getting sick, and like I didn't really feel that well eating them, so I was like, I'm just not even going to worry about
smart.
It.
Yeah.
You
know, you ever think about just like, well, I guess I would go completely against it, because I know a lot of people go for bananas because of the potassium.
Yeah.
And so there's like a little side note I always tell people, that there's more potassium in bacon than bananas.
Yeah, but see, with the protein and all the fat that goes along with it.
It would be too hard.
Yeah.
Exactly. I know you're not eating the bananas for the potassium, but I bet 90% of the people on that race who did eat bananas ate it for the potassium.
Yeah, I mean, that's one benefit of it, but I mean, there's more potassium. I think there's like 3 or 4 times as much potassium in an avocado.
Yeah.
But the only downside with an avocado is all the fat that comes along with it, it takes a lot longer to digest.
Yeah.
So that's why pretty much the worst foods for you are actually beneficial on these type of things.
Because yeah.
They're going to hit your system super fast, which is what you want.
It is. Because your body's busy doing a million other things.
Yeah. So like, hey, soda, go for it.
Yeah.
Those 50 grams of sugar that you can consume in 30 seconds, great. You need them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the only time that's like a good time to do it. I recommend consuming them about 2 hours into your event, or if you're doing maybe only a 2-hour event, maybe waiting at least 30 to 45 minutes, because you should be good to go. You should be able to burn your fat for the first quarter, third of your race, regardless. Especially if you've been doing all the other recommendations.
You wouldn't eat anything.
Yeah, you should be a good fat burner.
Yeah.
So just use those carbs as like the jet fuel that they're designed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely electrolytes. You have to consume them. Consuming water by itself is pretty much worthless, because you're losing so much through your sweat. Even if you are a great sweater, you're an efficient sweater, you're still going to be losing a lot of salt and everything from it. You should have seen my shirt after I was done racing. I had like these lines on my shirt from like my chest from like where it was sweating, where it was in contact with, and it looked like a design on my shirt. Like, yeah. I told my dad, he's like, oh, I thought that was a design. I was like, no, that's how much sweat has been coming out of me.
Really?
Yeah. It was pretty crazy. Yeah. I should take a picture. I think I washed that shirt.
Too late now, yeah.
Maybe it shows up on some of my pictures.
Okay.
But yeah, like, my neck was covered in, like, salt. I could feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was grainy and everything.
Yeah.
Because you're just losing so much. So you got to be replacing those. A couple ways to do it. You can either, like, make salt pills at home. Get, like, a high-quality salt, like Redmond's. Because that's going to have a lot more than just sodium in it. It's going to have potassium, magnesium, iodine, all your minerals. You can get like electrolyte tablets. That's what I did just because they taste better. And they're kind of like more condensed.
Mm-hmm.
So I added four of those to the bladder on my like running backpack. And then every time I went to an aid station, I would have them like refill like with just electrolytes.
Okay.
Like not the only time I consume water is when I was doing the essential amino acids.
Got it.
So, yeah, like, you need electrolytes. Sports drinks, good to go, because now you're getting a lot of sugar, too. So that was kind of, like, my fueling source while I was running, was just consuming liquid ones.
Yeah, that's so, it's kind of counterintuitive, and I think it's just because the narrative that's out there. When you hear someone's really dehydrated, they never say, hey, bro, go take, like, a teaspoon of salt. It's always, like, go drink more water. But in all essence, that could honestly, just drinking more water can make the situation worse. Dehydration and being hydrated has way more to do with electrolytes than actual water. So you want to focus on electrolytes when you're going to be in these situations where you're sweating for 11 hours.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, just water by itself isn't really going to do much. Because, yeah, that's really what you're losing is just all the minerals.
Yeah.
And that's going to play into, like, how your muscles are able to contract. Just all your bodily functions rely on all these minerals. Those electrical gradients, that's what they're doing.
Exactly.
And the essential amino acids we talked about earlier, they contain branched chain amino acids. They're already digested, so you don't need to like eat protein sources like bacon. Or like beef jerky, something like that.
Yeah.
They're good. And what the essential amino acids do is like they'll help you with recovery for one. They're also like precursors for neurotransmitters and hormone production. I think I mentioned that earlier, like noradrenaline and adrenaline.
Yeah.
Like those are precursors for that. So they're going to help you with the exercise itself. I definitely feel a good performance boost when I started consuming those essential amino acids. And I mean, this is just like an N equals one experiment, but it's the one thing that made a difference with my cramps. Like every time it was like clockwork between like mile 10 and 15 of a longer run, I would start getting really bad cramps in my hamstrings and my calves. And once I introduced this, I didn't have them again. I kind of experienced a little bit of calf cramping the day of the race, but oh, that was nothing compared to what I was doing before.
Really?
And I was able to, while I was still moving, I was able to get rid of that within like 20 minutes.
Cool.
I mean, I know that's not like very scientific, but hey, it worked for me. It worked out one other person I talked about. So
no, it makes sense to me because as your muscles are burning through glycogen, burning through the glucose, alanine is one of the amino acids used to transport glucose in and out of the cell because, and I literally mean that, transport glucose in and out of the cell, because our muscles literally can't, we don't have the enzymes to actually put glucose from our muscles to our blood. So we have to use kind of a roundabout way to make that glucose into alanine, and then we ship alanine out. So when we're burning, water and glycogen kind of hang out together. So as you are burning glycogen, you are depleting water in your muscles as well. So it makes sense that you get alanine in your body from this drink, and then alanine goes back and replaces that whole system. So it makes sense to me in that way.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I haven't looked into it that much, but yeah, that does make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So the last topic we're going to cover is just gear. This is a really short topic. This is kind of going long in the tooth already. So I recommend minimalist shoes, but don't just start wearing minimalist shoes if you've been wearing like some like high heel type running shoes before.
Oh, did you notice shoes out there?
Kind of.
A lot of high heels or no?
I mean, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah,
that's what most people are wearing. I didn't really like look that much. I was more worried about my own self.
Got it.
I had enough problems going on.
Yeah, 2 miles in, you're like, I'm done.
Yeah.
Yo, like, if you would have came here today and you said I cramped at 2 miles, I would have told you to leave. I would have been like, get the fuck out.
Oh, if I quit right
then? Yeah, if you quit right then, yeah. It would have been it, yeah.
I still thought I was going to finish in like 8 hours, and like, I thought I was going to be good, but I just didn't know 8 hours would have been like top 10.
Crazy pace, yeah.
So shoes with more cushion allow for you to have poor running mechanics, and over time that's going to result in injuries. If you have poor running mechanics, it's going to be bad for your knees, bad for your hip, bad for your ankle, bad for your back, bad for something.
So wearing like a minimalist shoe forces you to correct that because you're going to feel those pain like really early on. So you have to have better running mechanics. And in a study, they had people run over a force plate wearing different types of shoes. So they go from barefoot to like minimalist down to like the thickest sole shoes possible. And when the people were running barefoot and then minimalist, they had a much less force production compared to like the biggest running shoe. So that means it's like you're being more running efficient. So like you're barely stepping on that force plate. So the less force production you're exerting with that one step, translate that over to 50,000 steps is going to make a gigantic difference.
Did you do 50,000 steps?
More than that.
God, jeez Louise. So all you basic bitches out there talking about, I do 10,000 steps a day. That ain't nothing, man. Come on.
Oh, I hit that. I think that's like 4 miles.
Done.
So times that by like 7 or 8.
That's yeah. Cool, man. Yeah.
I mean, I'd have to check my phone to see how many I actually did that, but yeah, it was a lot.
That's cool. Oh, yeah. Did your phone say charge the whole time? Just in your pocket?
I wasn't using it for anything. I didn't play music or anything.
Oh, okay.
Because me getting lost the week before on a training run.
Scared
you? I was
you?
Like, you know what? Let me just not listen to music. And if I do get lost out here, not have a fully charged phone to get me back home.
There you go.
I don't want to get lost out here. And if I did get gored by a boar, I would have had a phone to call for help. Yeah. Instead of having that thing die, I'll be...
See, it's experience, right? It's these little things that make you better.
Yeah. So, yeah, just barefoot running or just minimalist shoes. You do need protection on our feet. We're not hobbits anymore. We don't have that, like, thick soles on our feet anymore. So, like, we do need some sort of protection. So we just go with ones that have, like, the minimalist amount. And that less cushion is going to be better for you overall.
Have you ever Googled images of, like, indigenous people's feet?
Oh, they're so much different than ours.
Oh, my God. Please go out and Google people, like... I can't remember the tribe, but some tribe in like Peru, I think I just saw, I don't know why. I mean, I guess we all Google weird shit, you know what I mean? But looking at their feet, they look like alien feet. Toes are huge and flat, super thick. It's crazy. They do not look like our feet.
Yeah, shoes have changed our feet so much. And that's one of the things during this this break that I'm taking, I'm really going to be working on.
Strong feet.
Barefoot as much as I possibly can be. Wearing shoes with, I'm going to get some minimalist shoes, get used to walking in those. Mm. And then when I do start running again, I'm going to start running in minimalist shoes so I can get used to it. So it's going to fix my running mechanics. It's going to make me more efficient. Just kind of be way more natural.
Tell me how the minimalist shoes go. Because that is an area, obviously I talked about this months ago and I failed that experiment. That is something I still, it's on my mind still.
Yeah. So another study, this comes from the book Born to Run. They talk about that the more expensive the running shoe generally means like the more cushion involved, the higher the risk of injury. So they looked at studies of just like running related injuries over the past like 50 years when it comes to running. Obviously, we have way more technology when it comes to running now. So with all that added technology, running injuries should be down, right? Nope, not at all. It's pretty much steady. No change. So all the advances that we've done in like shoe technology don't mean a damn thing. So that just means like the more cushion you have on your feet, you're able to get away with a lot more. So when you go to like a high-tech running store and they're fitting these shoes for you, they're fitting shoes for your shitty running mechanics.
Yep.
And instead of telling you to fix your running mechanics, because obviously they can't make money off of that, they're selling you a shoe that'll let you get away with those crappy running mechanics. Instead of the real solution, which you should be doing for long-term health, is fixing your running mechanics and then you'll be a better runner.
But, you know, that's a perfect, like, analogy to just the problem with everything. It's like...
Throw a Band-Aid on it.
Yeah, throw a Band-Aid on it, take a pill, do this. Like, don't actually fix the problem.
Yeah.
Just treat the symptoms.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's so sad.
Yeah, that's where I'm trying to get at with the minimalist shoes. It's a thing I'm really going to try to adapt with. And then also get shoes for the terrain. Because I had running, like, road shoes before. They weren't really made for the trail. Mm-hmm. And this really came up when I was on that steep-ass decline. Because I was like, I had no traction. This one guy passed me, because it probably took me a good 10 minutes to go down this hill because I was going so slow, taking baby steps and just sliding. This guy was going slow, but he had traction. He wasn't sliding at all. And he just like looked at my shoes. He's like, yeah, man, you need to get better shoes.
Yeah, like, thanks, bro. Yeah.
I really wanted to trip. I would have killed him so I could do it.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's
yeah,
funny.
So like definitely get appropriate shoes for the terrain. That's definitely one thing I'm going to work on. Find the best, like, trail shoes I can with the smallest soles.
Yeah.
And then like this is something that kind of came up to me this last time is like different type of hydration vests. I used to have like a fanny pack type of thing. It just like held 2 small water bottles. That was definitely not enough. It was good enough for a race, but not good enough for like, the training runs I go on.
So like during a race, you have aid stations every 5 miles or so. So you're not going more than like an hour without having access to water. But if I go run 20 miles on a training run, I don't have access to water.
You're by yourself.
So I need to carry a lot more water. So you might want to invest in having like a hydration vest, something small, something lightweight that you can run with during your events, but then also have something big where you can carry a ton of water for your longer training runs.
Now, you said you only like half liked your backpack initially. After the race, do you like it more or less?
You know, it didn't really seem like it made any difference to me.
So you're not going to get a new one? You're just
going to
ride
with that? I'm probably going to buy a small one, though.
Okay.
Just because we're only talking a few pounds here, but a few pounds spread over 30 miles, spread over 60 miles is going to make a big difference.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think I will invest in it. It's just, this stuff's expensive. You know, it's a lot of money piling in.
This is all, like, specialty gear.
Yeah, especially because I'm brand new at it. Like, that backpack that I bought for this race, it's going to last me years. It's not like I'm going to have to replace it anytime soon. So that what I'm going to do with that one, since it holds so much water, and it's got plenty of pockets so I can hold a bunch of other stuff, that's going to be my training backpack. And then I'm going to have a race one, which will be, like, small, lightweight.
Lean and mean.
Yeah.
Okay.
That doesn't have all those extra bells and whistles on it because it doesn't need it.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of, you know, more sport specific.
Yeah.
So I think that's about covers it. It was a lot to go over there.
No, that was great, man. I think that was so good. That's such a great little, I mean, shit, not little, big outline of exactly what to do with your training, with your diet, and with your overall game day game plan. If you're going to try and do an ultra, or if you just want to get into this long running game, this is a great little outline to follow.
Yeah, and the three primary sources for all that information, like my go-tos for this information, was Primal Endurance by Mark Sisson. It is such a great book. You know, honestly, when I was reading it, I was like, damn, why did he have to write this book? Because if I were to ever write a book, it would basically be this one.
That'd be it.
And unfortunately, he's a much better athlete than me. So why would people buy mine when they could buy his?
Yeah, I know.
So like that was a great book. If you want another great source when it comes to like nutrition and all that other stuff, Zach Bitter. He is the best in the world when it comes to endurance racing. So follow him. He's got a podcast out there. He's got a blog. You can just go to zachbitter.com to find all of his information.
His podcast is Human Performance Outliers.
Yeah, it's with Sean Baker. Yeah. They're two pro carnivore guys. They're a really good one. And then the book on like just running, I disagreed with damn near all of the nutritional advice from it. And it basically just tells a story. It's called Born to Run by Christopher McDougall. But it just makes a pretty good reasoning behind why like we should be barefoot runners or like minimalist shoes runners. So if you're trying to like figure out, oh, should I do this or should I not? It's a good story behind that.
That's cool. Does it talk about like the Kenyans running with like sandals and shit?
Briefly. It's okay. Mostly about a tribe in Mexico.
Oh, yeah. No, you told me. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So like he takes... So he's like a sport, I think it works for like Sports Illustrated or one of those type of magazines. Mm-hmm. And he's like focusing on running and he's running himself. And then all of a sudden he has a problem where he can't run more than like 5 miles without having a foot injury. So he goes to a doctor. He tells him, well, you got to stop running. Running's bad for your feet. It's like, what? Mm-hmm. No. So he goes to another doctor. Same thing. Goes to like the sports science doctors. Goes to everybody. Everybody's telling him the same thing.
Yeah.
You got to stop running. It's bad for your feet. Well, he doesn't buy that. So he's like, no, this can't be true because I see 70-year-old men out there running. How is it bad for my feet, but it's not bad for them?
Yeah.
So he just kind of doesn't believe that.
And if you know anything about our species, we're literally designed to run.
Yeah. And that's what this book kind of gets at. So he goes on like he's traveling around the world trying to figure it out. And he stumbles across this like hidden tribe in Mexico that are like the best athletic runners on the world. They do like a race that like nobody was at. They have, you're like, it was him, a couple of the top runners from America, Scott Drorick, who was like the man when it comes to endurance running. He traveled down there. He got beat by a couple of their runners and like their home turf event. And they're basically running with like some sandals.
Yeah. Like just think about it.
A couple of them were like, they'd get an old tire and cut it to the shape of their foot. And then just strap it to their foot with, like, rope.
So pretty much they're just protecting themselves from, like, cuts.
Yeah, because they're running through the desert.
Yeah.
So there's all these, like, thorns and rocks and stuff. So you do need a little bit of protection. But, like, that's all it is. That's just, crazy. Like, an extra sole on their foot.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Just adding some thicker skin.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, he started just kind of running that way. And he did great. So
that's cool. But don't listen to the nutrition advice in that book. It's shit. So
yeah, it was all definitely heavily vegan based.
Yeah. But
whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Did you have, you don't have a tip of the week, right?
I do not have a tip of the week. This last week I was busy prepping for that race. And then after that race, I was
doing all
working
this.
On this. So I didn't really have time for one.
Yeah, but this is long enough.
And there were a lot of tips in there.
Oh, God. A million tips in there. Yeah. So this is, man, that was a real good episode. I hope you guys all enjoyed it. Thank you for listening. Next week, we think we're going to do a little topic on what cooking does to our food. So specifically, we have questions about the nutrition, about raw meat versus cooked meat. So we're going to go into that. If that interests you, just keep an eye out for that. And yeah, anything else, you can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. Any questions, comments, or concerns, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. So feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please rate and subscribe to our podcast. You can find us on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and YouTube. And then if you do, please donate. You can find that donate button on our homepage towards the bottom of our website. If you can't donate, then support us another way and just like and subscribe to our podcast. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.